Pop Spotting 116.
Monday, August 29th, 2011.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's that or we both better go do something else, pal.
I don't know how to do anything else.
Neither do I.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's Movie Monday, and today we have a double feature, something I like to call supersized De Niro. These are two really extra long movies that Robert De Niro is in.
All right. And the films are?
Heat and Goodfellas.
All right. Well, let's start with Heat. That came out in 1995, and it was directed by Michael Mann.
Written and directed by Michael Mann.
Yes, I stand corrected. But how much do you love Heat?
I love this movie, and not for the reasons a lot of people, other people love it. I love it because it's the story of two men, a career bank robber played by Robert De Niro and a police officer played by Al Pacino. And instead of really being about their jobs, I think this movie is about their relationships with women. Diane Venora plays Al Pacino's soon-to-be ex-wife, and Amy Brenneman plays the woman that Robert De Niro meets in the beginning of the film and starts a relationship with, and how their jobs completely interfere or change the relationships that they have at home with these women.
Well, I mean, I would say absolutely it is a film about a bad guy and a good guy, or I wouldn't even say that, a cop, as you said, a career cop and a career bank robber, and how they interact, how you get into that chase, how they basically are pursuing or obsessive about the things that they love. But you're right. I mean, in terms of the things that they care about or proclaim to not care about, the women play a central role. But you got to admit, I mean, for people who are interested in kind of a bank robbery caper, Heat is also a good film in that regard.
It's a great film. It has everything. It has really great shootout scenes, like wonderfully choreographed shootout scenes. It has incredible tension. It has great acting. There's something about this movie that always kind of grabs me. It's almost 3 hours long, and it's a complete epic huge story, but there are so many things along the way about it that really grab my attention.
Well, certainly it's a Michael Mann film, so it's very stylish, it's very well put together. I would say at times a little too stylish for its own good, but I mean, in terms of an entire package put together with the music, with the cinematography, with the performances, with action versus dialogue, it's just really well balanced. As you mentioned, it doesn't feel like 3 hours because it's put together so well. And a lot of people kind of saw it as a showcase of these two top shelf actors, at least at this point. You know, De Niro and Pacino probably have not had the best roles lately, but here you had what at the time kind of was described as a dream team, these two fantastic actors facing off against each other, you know, on opposite sides of the law, and people still talk about this film in that respect.
They do, but I actually enjoy the supporting cast more. I like Ashley Judd and Val Kilmer as the married couple, because my favorite scene happens toward the end of the film. The police don't have any idea where Val Kilmer's character is, and they've caught Ashley Judd's character, and they're trying to lead Val Kilmer to them, and they know that he's coming, and they have her there, and she has to say to them, yeah, he's here, go get him. But instead of leading them to him, she non-verbally tells him through a window, get out of here. And it's such a great tense scene, because up to that point their relationship has been really rocky, but you can see in both of their eyes there's something going on, and she's really trying to protect him.
Right. And I think from that and what you said at the beginning is that this film in many ways is about relationships, not necessarily between the bank robber and the cop, but between all of these people and the people that matter to them, or the people that they claim or, you know, try to say don't matter to them. You've got Pacino, who's essentially married to his job. I think he actually says that explicitly, and he can't sustain a relationship. You have Pacino's character, who says, hey, you know, girls are girls, and I'm never going to get attached to them because they just hold you back. And Val Kilmer as well, he's got a woman who isn't necessarily happy with his choice of profession, but also sees that what he does well, and what he has to do. And there is a major scene in the film where they have this conversation, Pacino and De Niro, about these attachments and what they can do to you.
The scene in the coffee shop is pivotal, because they lay it all out for you in that conversation. De Niro says, some guy told me this once, not to get attached to anything you can't walk out in 30 seconds if you feel the heat around the corner. Well, De Niro does run away in 30 seconds from something that he gets attached to, and he pays for it in the end. And Al Pacino's character, like you said, is married to his job. It's cost him not only his relationship with Diane Venora's character, but two other wives, he tells us, that he's had in his career. Also, Dennis Haysbert, who played President Palmer in 24.
Right, right.
We don't see him very much during the movie. We see him in maybe three scenes. His relationship with his wife is very loving. She's trying to get him on the right track. He's been in prison, but he runs away from that relationship to join Pacino's crew, and it ends up costing him also.
Well, I like that the film focuses a lot on choices, and in fact, you know, this is the conventional one last heist or one last job sort of setup, where if we just get this done, we'll be done forever. But actually, several points in the film, members of his crew are given the opportunity to say, okay, you've come far enough, the heat is getting too big, you know, this is your chance to walk away, and they don't. I mean, they very seriously consider those choices, and so I really like that part of the film. Well, but let's talk a little bit about those two, you know, A-list top shelf actors here, at least at the top of their game. You've got De Niro and Pacino and their performances. I mean, Al Pacino, he is Al Pacino more in this film than he is almost everywhere else. He gets around to shouting in almost every single scene.
We have this thing we call the Al Pacino event horizon.
Right, right.
Because in every movie, there's a scene in which Pacino starts yelling, and he doesn't stop yelling throughout the film most of the time. And he reaches the Al Pacino event horizon at about 34 minutes.
Yeah, fairly early on. In fact, we also said the same thing about John Cleese. There's sort of that scenario, like maybe you're watching Fawlty Towers or one of those series.
A Fish Called Wanda.
Exactly. And after a certain point, they're just yelling for the rest of the film. But, you know, Pacino is, you know, being himself, he's chewing up the scenery more than I would say De Niro. In fact, De Niro in this film, despite the fact that they're portrayed or even the film was marketed as a face-off between equals, I think, and I commend De Niro for having a surprisingly understated, for the most part, performance in this film compared to what we had seen from him before.
I own a book called 10 Bad Dates with De Niro. It's a book of movie lists. But in this book, there's a list of all the bad relationships that are portrayed in Robert De Niro films with Robert De Niro. And it's really refreshing to see a relationship with a woman in a film so nicely portrayed. I really bought the relationship that Robert De Niro had with Amy Brenneman. And I thought that aspect of his character was probably the most believable, the thing that I could identify with him the most.
Right, certainly. I mean, Pacino is on a whole other level, and you can see the disconnect between him and his wife, the disconnect between him and the rest of the police force. I mean, they're all basically trying to keep up with him. He's always a few steps ahead, running a few levels of blood pressure higher than everybody else. I mean, the one thing about this film, though, and I think, but unfortunately it is whether or not you like the style, Michael Mann's style, is along with all the taut scenes and well, you know, lit location shots and city scenes, is he does almost every aspect of a film. The rapping is really good, but in this film, I have more of an issue with the dialogue than pretty much anything else. You mentioned that scene in the coffee shop. I think that it was all about the dialogue. It is pivotal, but what they say, I think they say too much. I mean, basically, I think there's too much exposition, too much explaining, too much literal statements of fact or thought and motivations. And maybe it's not as visible with De Niro's performance and Kilmer's performance and some of the women. And you mentioned Ashley Judd. I keep forgetting, you know, some of her other performances in other movies. This one is a good one for her. But when you, particularly in the case of Pacino, when he gets these lines, he delivers them so deliberately that I just find it a step too far. I find it a step too explicit. He has that conversation in the coffee shop that everybody loves. It's a fantastic showdown between two great actors, but I think the dialogue is the worst part of it, as central as it is to what has to be expressed. And even Pacino's dialogue with his wife when he basically says, hey, baby, this is what you signed up for. I mean, it is almost cliche, some of the things that come out of his mouth.
Yeah, I agree. I like that scene just because it lays down everything that we find out later on about these men and their relationships, but I think there is a lot of dialogue that could be cut from the film. It is a very long film, and I think that the focus of this film is on the action, even though it is a movie about relationships.
Well, and that's the thing, too. I mean, I think that what anybody who likes Heat is responding to is the human connection, the drama, the motivations, the interactions between these characters, and I think that although there are some really good, well-choreographed action scenes and heist scenes and, you know, chase scenes and such, right up to it, it all basically builds up to what is conventionally a climax in a movie. And to me, that climax, that final bank heist and the shootout, is so conventional it almost turns me off the entire movie. I actually think that the action is overemphasized, and particularly in that scene, it is almost ridiculous.
It's very video gamey, very well choreographed and very neat, and there's just a lot of it, and it becomes kind of mechanical toward the end. It's not as effective as the violence in Goodfellas, where in Goodfellas you really feel it in your gut, and by the end of this movie you're not really feeling it the same way you do in Goodfellas.
Yeah, it's a little video gamey. I mean, you said that it's neat, and I think that that's kind of an interesting way to describe it, because it is messy in terms of innocent bystanders and cars shot up and people running and screaming, but it desensitizes you to it. It's not as dramatic, and I actually kind of long for an ending that's closer to that that serious dialogue heavy coffee shop scene than what we get. And the last few scenes of the film, I mean, where you finally do get the showdown that's been building up to, at least between these two characters, there's no dialogue in it at all for an extended sequence there. And it's very clearly a deliberate choice. We've had all this talkiness and all of this exposition that I just complained about, and so you have the end of the film, very loud and messy shootout, and then a final chase sequence and a final conclusion between these two characters. And given the film and everything leading up to it, was that a satisfying ending?
It is. It looks great. It's very well choreographed, and I like the backdrop of the airport, and it's an ending that makes you wonder about things and leaves you wanting to know more about things that you saw over the course of the film.
Yeah, I like that it finally brings it back down to the two of them out in essentially the wilderness and alone, despite the urban setting, compared to that shootout. So I do like how the film altogether fits as a package, and I do like Mann's visual style. And here in Heat, you have Los Angeles looking, I don't know how else to say it, very man-like. We, years ago, in the early, precursor to Pop Spotting, we did a top five LA movies, and one of the criteria was that LA being one of the characters of the film, I think Heat would have qualified for that.
Well, much to my shame, when I made that list, I hadn't seen Heat yet.
Right, right.
So we might have to revisit that topic at some point. But I like the way LA looks in this movie. I would live in the LA that Mann creates. Also, in Collateral, that movie with Tom Cruise, I thought L.A. looked really great in that movie,
too. Yeah, that's a Michael Mann film as well.
Right.
The only complaint, apart from maybe Pacino hitting that Pacino event horizon, and maybe the shootout and just some of that gun violence going on a bit too long, the soundtrack of this movie distracts me. But I think the more we go back and watch films from being made in that era, I mean, the more the soundtracks are distracting. So just maybe that's the style that it was. It's almost Inception-like in its lack of subtlety there. But that was Heat, and the pairing, the other half of this De Niro, supersized De Niro double feature, was Goodfellas. And between the two, I love this film even more. Tell us about it.
It was directed by Martin Scorsese. It stars Robert De Niro, Ray Liotta, Lorraine Bracco, and Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor.
Right.
And actually, fun trivia fact, Martin Scorsese's mom plays Joe Pesci's mom.
Yeah, she was really good. I mean, for a director's mom appearing in the movie, but she's probably had a lot of experience being a Italian mother. But in any case, this was based on a book, Wise Guy, by Nicholas Pileggi. And in this film, we follow our friend De Niro from Los Angeles all the way over to New York, and almost kind of a historic New York, at least at the start of the film, where it too is well presented as integral to the story, because it's a mob movie.
I love mob movies, but the thing about mob movies is that New York is always clean and shiny and bright, and everybody dresses well and everybody's well-mannered. But this is the story of Henry Hill, who as an adolescent meets several mafia figures, and he rises through the ranks in the mafia and develops relationships with all these people, and the story is about his rise and fall.
Right, and this is a Martin Scorsese film, so I guess it certainly is big and sprawling and another 3-hour film. But before we get to some of the wrappings and the presentation of this film, which I personally, it's one of my favorites for Scorsese, there are a lot of other great performances, and it does hinge quite a bit on Ray Liotta, his performance as Henry Hill. He narrates much of the film because it is essentially an autobiography, at least is how it's presented.
Henry Hill's closest friend is Jimmy Conway, played by Robert De Niro.
Right.
Lorraine Bracco plays his wife. Joe Pesci plays another mafia associate, and the performance that Joe Pesci gives in this film is really kind of iconic. There's mm-hmm. so many things that you see in pop culture that are lifted from Joe Pesci's character in this film.
Well, there's a lot of things in mob films and even on television. Sopranos, I think that's our pick for tomorrow on our TV Tuesday. I mean, a lot of that comes from Goodfellas as well. And but I mean, talk about Lorraine Bracco in performances. She plays the wife of Ray Liotta. She's my favorite part of the film, and I love her as an actress on The Sopranos as well.
I do too.
You know, the one of the things that I like is that it starts off, and it is essentially an autobiography of Henry Hill's character, but she has an opportunity late in the film. You're almost surprised to hear her voice overcome, and it turns out the two of them are telling the story together, and both from what you see on screen, what she does and how she interacts with Ray Liotta's character and what she says, that's what I really enjoy about this movie. It's told in a really creative way.
We see Ray Liotta become unhinged at the end of the film, and Karen, his wife, has been brought up in a very conservative Jewish household,
right.
And we really see her change from this very conservative, nice girl into somebody who eventually becomes unhinged along with her husband.
Well, I don't know if she starts off conservative or nice. I mean, she blasts onto the screen with surprising power. I mean, that's why I think Ray Liotta's character, Henry Hill, is attracted to her, but the dynamics between them is great. You know, she is at turns both vulnerable and lost, but also very much in charge of the situation at times. And, you know, their interactions with, their navigation through this mafia community, this mob community, and all the people that they meet and the places they go and the experiences that they have. I mean, it's a sprawling, messy, messy film. Not as neat and tidy as Heat, but that's what I love about it. That's what I love about Scorsese's style. I just love this universe that he just lets us run about almost uncontrollably.
Scorsese is such a rock and roll director. Mm. He, in the beginning of the film, we hear a lot of mafia music classics and R&B and stuff that isn't really what you think of as rock and roll, but his style is very kind of jump cutty and very avant-garde, and that's what I enjoy about him.
Yeah, and the music in this film, I mean, compared to Heat, for example, the music is integral to what the enjoyment and the remembering of some of the iconic scenes in this film.
Well, who can forget Layla, you know, playing over the cops, finding all the bodies in the truck, and Atlantis over the beating of Billy Batts and Gimme Shelter. I don't know how many times Scorsese has used Gimme Shelter in his movies. He's even directed the Stones concert film. So he definitely has an appreciation for the music. And I love the way that he combines great imagery with the music.
Well, you know, Gimme Shelter, in that that scene where you see Ray Liotta's character Henry Hill start to fall apart, that entire sequence I like a lot, because you hear his narration and you hear as he's starting to get more and more frantic, and you can really feel that he feels he's being rational, even though we know as watching that he's being completely irrational. You have the helicopters, you have his opportunity or his plan to just get this everything done in one day, make sauce at home, pick up the money here, deliver this there, pick up a hat there. And as he's explaining it, you know he's clearly out of his mind. And I mean, that's definitely a fantastic sequence. But I mean, this movie is known for sequences. There's the long tracking shot where they show up at the nightclub, for example.
That's an amazing, amazing shot. But my favorite scene in the film is the scene where they deliver all of the food to the prison. That's the thing that always sticks in my mind about the film, is Paul Sorvino holding down the clove of garlic and him slicing it with a razor blade. And I think this is just in general a really great food movie, because there are tons of scenes like that in this film. People think of Big Night as a great food movie, but this is definitely one of those.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier, the violence in this film is not, you know, they don't shy away from it. It is visceral. It is fists in face. It is a lot of blood and gore. There's even, you know, kind of decomposed body in a pivotal scene. So that's all right there. But I agree, it's a great food film. It makes me hungry at the same time as it might make me a little sick to my stomach. But yeah, you've got those long tracking shots. You've got point of view shots, dolly shots, overhead shots, very deliberate, very diverse cinematography. He's not trying to color within the lines. He's a kid in the playground. He's got a box of crayons, and he's going to do whatever he wants. I love that playful style that he tries many different things in this film.
And I think he's really trying to say something, especially when you think about Joe Pesci's character and how he's just so needlessly cruel, and he kills people for no reason, and everybody around him laughs as he's doing these horrible things, except for one or two exceptions. And I wonder what Scorsese is trying to say about the culture in which these people are laughing at these really violent, horrible acts.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the brilliant things about Goodfellas, is that it does, in many ways, as it's been, in fact, accused of being, kind of glamorized this violent lifestyle. But I do think that Scorsese isn't necessarily doing that, because several scenes in the movie are about things being pushed a little further, being pushed a little further, and, you know, more and more people maybe getting uncomfortable with it and then going all the way across the line. And it's that decision-making process, it's those limits of what we're willing to put up with, that is, I think, what Scorsese wants us as viewers to deal with. But again, I would say between the two films, you know, you've got a very neat and taut Heat, or you have a really messy Goodfellas, but I can watch Goodfellas over and over again. What's your favorite out of these two in terms of your De Niro double feature?
In a way, that's kind of like asking me to pick a kid. I'm attracted to Heat in the fact that LA looks so nice and the characters are all so great, especially the supporting cast. And I love Goodfellas because of my love of mob movies. They're two completely different films.
Well, they're both great films, and I think this is a great pairing. You've got Super Size De Niro, a double feature here on Pop Spotting. We've got a couple of recommendations we might try out going ahead for Movie Monday if we can't, you know, scratch together the cash to see a new release in the near future. But once again, we do want your feedback as well. What do you think about these films? Is there something that would have been an even better showcase for long form De Niro? And finally, is there a double feature that you'd like us to try and tackle? All you got to do is get in touch.
Leave a comment on our blog at popspotting.net, drop us a line at feedback@popspotting.net, or leave us a voicemail at 815-310-0808.
You can also connect with us at facebook.com/popspotting or twitter.com/popspotting.
Come back tomorrow for TV Tuesday, where we continue Mob Week.
That's right. And we do want to say, though, thank you to Dan Pashman of the Sporkful Podcast for our theme song. And we want to say a big mahalo anui loa to you for listening.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Forget about it.
Forget about it.